lost your life, what would you leave behind? What would the ones around you see? What happened in the dash between your birth and death? What will you do to change your legacy? What will you do to change your legacy?
Hey everyone, this is Steve Donahue with another episode of the Legacy Podcast, helping you build a multi-generational legacy of abundance. Today's episode is number 78, and what we're going to talk about today is financial capital. We're continuing our series on the eight different forms of capital that was first discussed by Ethan C. Rowland of Appleseed Permaculture. And again, I'll put a link in the show notes to the original article from which I get this information. And it should be a good show for you today. I'll discuss that it shouldn't be a real long one. Financial capital is something a lot of people are familiar with, but maybe my take on it will be able to give you some information you do not already have. And so stay tuned for that. But before we do that, I want to take care of a little bit of introductory material. First of all, our affiliate focus for today is Liberty Classroom. It's a new one. And the reason why I like Liberty Classroom is it is a great resource, particularly for homeschooling families who have high school age kids that need a good history curriculum. This is designed by Thomas Woods, who himself is a homeschooler, and it is a great resource. They have on there different classes. They have two courses in Western civilization, two courses in American history, and one course in Austrian economics. And all of that you can get for $99. And the courses themselves you can listen to through audio. You can watch the speakers themselves through video. There is quizzes that you can take after each lecture, as well as additional reading, much of which you can find on the internet. And I don't know of any place where you can get this much solid information for that little price, and it's fantastic. And the best thing about it is that it is done by people who actually like the field that they are studying. For example, if you take a typical college course or high school course in Western civilization, most of the time the people don't like the Western civilization. And I remember I was a history major in college, and many of the courses that I took in Western civilization, it was bashing of European culture and American culture and all that has made the West great. It was a bashing of that. And you won't find that in this curriculum. You'll find just the opposite. And so it's a great resource. Check it out. Best place to do that is on the right center column of the website. And look around and listen to a few of the excerpts that are on there. And it's fantastic material. My son, my oldest son and I are going through it right now. And we're really enjoying it. And he as well. So Liberty Classroom. Second thing is, if you have any feedback you'd like to give me, the best way to do that is steve@thelegacypodcast.com. That comes directly to me, and I'd appreciate any kind of feedback that you give me as to possible topics that you would like to have me talk on, questions that you might have, or suggestions on ways to improve the show. All of that, best way is at steve@thelegacypodcast.com. And then also be sure that you are telling your friends and family about us on all the various social media, Twitter, YouTube, Facebook, that kind of thing, getting the word out for us. I appreciate those of you who are doing that. And then also I want to encourage you to register to be a user of the website. This enables you not only to give comments to each of the podcasts on the website, but also it enables you to get updates through email when they happen. So anytime I put out a new post, you'll get notified of that through email. I also send out a few emails here and there. I won't bombard you with stuff, but anytime I have something important I want to send out to those that are registered users, you will get it by signing up. It's free, and I encourage you to do that. And then finally, if you'd like the show and you want to support the show, I really encourage you to become a Legacy Partner. Our Legacy Partner program is $30 a year. With that, you have access to our exclusive members-only page. It has discounts to various vendors. It has some resources available you can download, and has a great deal of information there, over $50 worth of value for only $30 a year. And with that, you can also support the show at less than 25 cents an episode. So great bargain. I've got things in the works, hoping to have up for you also that will be included in that. And hopefully that will continue to grow in its value and make it worthwhile. So check out the Legacy Partner Program and consider becoming one if you so choose. Well, that takes care of the introductory material. So now let's go ahead and talk about financial capital. And before I do that, I want to just briefly comment or briefly cover the various types of capital. There are eight that Ethan Rowland discusses in Appleseed Permaculture. And the first one is social capital. We've already talked about that. Material capital is the second one. We've talked about that. Now we're on the third one, which is financial capital. Number four is living capital. Number five is intellectual capital. Number six is experiential or human capital. Number seven is spiritual capital. And number eight is cultural capital. So what is financial capital? That's what we're talking about today. And financial capital is probably that which you are most familiar with from your experiences with financial advisors or reading books on finances or personal finances or microeconomics, whatever it might be. You're probably most familiar with financial capital or business capital, that kind of thing. People need financial capital in order to start businesses or raise funds. That's all considered financial capital. It's assets that are considered to be liquid in nature, assets that can be turned into dollars rather quickly. That's all financial capital. And so that's what we're talking about today. Now, what are some examples of financial capital? Well, they really are many of the asset classes that most people would think of when they think of an investment, a financial investment of one kind or another. They're all the technical asset classes. So, for example, stocks. If you buy a stock with a company, which a stock in a company is just a share in that company, so you're becoming a partner in that company. And of course, as you probably already know, there are voting shares and non-voting shares. Most of the time when you invest in a stock, you're a non-voting share, so you don't really have much authority other than you get a share in the profits and loss of that company. And that's a stock. And so there are stocks that can be financial capital. And obviously, if you have a stock, you can sell that stock and turn it into cash. And with that cash, you can then use it for something else. That's financial capital. Also, bonds are similar. This would be not only long-term and short-term bonds of the federal government, but it would also be municipal bonds and corporate bonds. These are all basically debt instruments where you are investing in a debt of a company or a debt of a town or a debt of a state or, debt of the federal government. And so you're letting them borrow your money by investing with them, and they're promising to pay you back a certain amount. And so bonds would be considered financial capital. Also, any kind of cash instruments. So cash instruments would be like CDs, money markets, those kinds of things. That's all cash and financial capital. Commodities would also be considered financial capital. I'm going to talk a little bit about some commodities here in another show under another type of capital. And we've already talked a little bit about some types of capital when we've got to hard currencies and things like that, silver and gold and raw materials and stuff like that when we talked about material capital. But most commodities when it comes to gold and silver would be considered financial capital. So if you've got gold and silver that you've purchased over time, that of course can be exchanged for money. And well, it is money in most cases, but it can be exchanged for cash, and then that cash can then be considered financial capital. Also, currencies. So if you invest in other currencies, whether you buy Canadian dollars or New Zealand dollars or Australian dollars or Swiss francs or whatever it might be that you're investing in, if you invest in those dollars, you're investing in or those currencies, then you're investing in financial capital, and you're using, of course, financial capital to purchase those. There are also different kinds of funds or investment strategies that you can use, and those funds then are usually invested in either ETFs, which are exchange-traded funds, or mutual funds. And those would be inverse funds. Now, an inverse fund is a type of fund where you are investing in a contrary strategy, meaning that you are investing in the hope that, for example, if you do an inverse fund for the S&P, then you are hoping that the S&P will go down, because if you've got an inverse fund, it works inversely to the S&P or whatever index that you're tracking. So if the S&P goes up, then you lose a lot of money because you're inverse. Whereas if the market goes down, the S&P goes down, you would learn a lot with Inverse. So Inverse Funds was also a type of financial capital. All the types of funds, the mutual funds and that kind of thing, are all different types. I'm just talking about different kinds of strategies here. Then you've got hedge funds. You've probably heard about that because hedge funds, advisors and stuff like that make a great deal of money on Wall Street and that kind of thing. But hedge funds work similar to the inverse fund. They actually hedge using debt and portfolio ratios and things like that to be able to accelerate their rates of growth. And then you've got long and short-term funds. That would be funds that can operate either long or short. So they might long the S&P, which means that they're hoping the S&P will go up, or they'll short the S&P, hoping that the S&P is going to go down. And they, you know, different strategies can do that. And then you have actively managed money accounts. These would be accounts where you have somebody who's actively managing them. They're buying and selling. They might be buying bonds one day and buying stocks the next, and then buying currencies the next, and then selling commodities the next. They're, you know, actively manage these on a daily basis, a moment by moment basis. And then you have REITs. These are REITs, which stands for Real Estate Investment Trusts. And these are similar to like a real estate partnership, only it's like a real estate with mutual funds or something like that, where or mutual funds that has real estate within it. I mean, and the idea is that you are getting the revenues off of those rentals or off of the real estate that you have within that portfolio. So those are REITs. Those are also financial capital, obviously, because they can be turned into cash very quickly. So that's what financial capital is. And so all the various funds that you have there. Now, there's all different kinds of strategies there. And let me say this before I go any further with this. Again, although I am licensed as an investment advisor and I have various financial licenses, I'm not giving any particular financial advice. I'm not intending for this to be any kind of sales solicitation, nor is it intended to be any kind of investment advice where you might pay me a fee for investing or advising you on anything. You want to, of course, look at your own personal situation and talk to an investment advisor who would be able to walk you through your specific steps and your particular suitability for any kind of thing. And so that's my disclaimer. Hopefully that would be able to satisfy the regulators if they were able to get a hold of this. And, you know, I'm not real keen on the regulators regulating what I do and say, but unfortunately, because I have various licenses, that is part of the deal. And so those are some examples of financial capital. Now, let's talk a little bit real briefly about why it's important to have financial capital. Obviously, financial capital is important because it is what people use as a means of exchange for most part. There is barter that is available. We've talked about that with material capital and other kinds of things where you can barter one thing for another, and in exchange for that, you can get something else that you might want, and that's strictly barter. But when it comes to actually exchanging something that you have that someone else may not want, but you want to be able to purchase something later, that's where money comes in and currency comes in and all these different kinds of things we talked about with financial capital. And so financial capital is essential as a means of exchange. It's essential as a means of acquiring more and producing more. It is what entrepreneurs do. They save up financial capital. And by saving up that financial capital, they can then invest it into other forms of capital and multiply their returns. And so it is essential that we do this. Now, most people already have some financial capital, whether it be a savings account that you have, or whether it be some a 401k or an IRA, or just some savings that you have, or some silver or gold that you've acquired, whatever it might be. You probably already have some financial capital. In fact, this is probably an area that most people have more familiarity with and actually have more of their assets in than some of the other areas. So that's why I'm not spending quite as much time on it, because that is the case. But nevertheless, I think it's important to understand that there are certain principles that come into play when we talk about financial capital. I wanted to briefly cover some of those. And, you know, it's often asked, well, how can we acquire more financial capital? And, you know, people are looking obviously for more money and more, you know, ability to be able to use that money for building a businesses or whatever, financing businesses, that kind of thing. And so it's a valid question. Well, first thing is that you should use the principle of pay yourself first. You've probably heard this before by investment advisors or other people who will tell you that if you wait till the end of the month to pay you something, to set something aside, to invest something, to put money away for yourself, there's not going to be much left, because difficulties happen, things come up, If we think we have that money there, we'll end up spending it. But if we take it from the top, and, you know, the Bible is really clear that we are to be tithers. That is, we are to give 10% of our money to God and for His purposes. And so when we practice that, we are doing the same thing on the sense of investing. We are investing in the kingdom of God. When we tithe 10%, we take it right off the top. We don't wait till the end. We don't wait till we find out how much we're going to have left over, and then we give you a portion of that. No, it's actually what we do is we take it from the very beginning, from the very top. And the same thing is true when we have the idea of pay ourselves first. When you pay yourself first, the idea is that you take it from the top before you pay the rest of your bills. And what happens is that you then find ways of saving money and reducing the costs throughout the week or month or whatever it might be, so that you're actually able to save that money. And so use the principle of pay yourself first. Second thing is use compounding effect. It is amazing the effect of compounding interest or compounding rate of return. I think it was Albert Einstein that said that the eighth wonder of the world is compound interest. And so it is amazing how much can be accumulated by using the effects of compounding interest. And some people like to use the concept of the rule of 72 to help demonstrate how this is and how this works out on a scale. So let's suppose for a moment that you have $10,000 in financial capital and you want to be able to acquire more financial capital. And so you look at your various investments and you realize that on average you're able to get a 7% rate of return, something like that. Well, you take 7 and you divide it into 72 and you come up with basically 10. And so that tells you that every 10 years that $10,000 that you have will double. So in 20 years, it'll be worth, in 10 years, it'll be worth $20,000. And in 20 years, it'll be worth $40,000. 30 years, it will be worth $80,000 and so forth. That's the rule of 72. It helps you figure out how fast your money will double based on the rate of return that you get. And it's a great compounding rule because it teaches you and demonstrates how important and how effective compounding is. And so if we want to acquire more financial capital, we need to take advantage of compounding. Also, there are some ways in which you can get others to buy into whatever it is that you are trying to raise capital for. So let's suppose that you are trying to start a business and you want to be able to start it with, you know, very little cost, and you've looked into it, and you've come up with it's going to cost you $2,000 to start your business, and you've maybe got $1,000 you can put into it, and you're looking for the other $1,000. And, you know, some people would put it on their credit card or something like that, and that's a possibility. But there are now some new options that you can use. And one of that is by actually going into a network of others who are looking to invest money and pooling your money with them. So there's things like Kickstarter. And I'll put links in the show notes to each of these. But Kickstarter is a group, probably the most well-known of these group funding, crowd investing type situations. And what it is if you have something you want somebody to invest in, you explain what it is, how it is, how much you're looking for, and then people can invest in that. And you can, of course, dictate the terms as to, you know, if they put $100 in there, what they're going to get out of that and that kind of thing. So there's all kinds of stipulations you can put on it, kind of parameters you can put on it. What it does is it enables you to be able to access the capital of others while they then are giving something in return for that success. And so it's kind of using the community and as the community works with you to accomplish your goals. It helps build financial capital for yourself as well as allocates correctly the capital that is there. And this, of course, is just what's done on a larger scale. It's just that I don't really suggest you go in and if you're going to start a business, getting a corporation and shareholders and all that kind of stuff. This is the best way to do it and to do it quickly and without complication. And then also you can trade with other forms of capital for which you have an excess. Obviously, I've mentioned this in other shows as well when we talked about the other kinds of capital. And so the idea is obviously if you've got an excess in one kind of capital, maybe it's you've got an excess in human capital, you can then exchange maybe some of that capital for some of the financial capital that you're looking for. And this, of course, would just be the normal exchange that you would have in a workplace where you exchange human capital for financial capital. They pay you a paycheck, you exchange your time for their dollars, and everybody seems to be happy with that system, or at least most people seem to be happy with that system. And so trading with other forms of capital for which you have an excess. So what do we do? What can we do today to build financial capital, or to work our way towards building financial capital? Well, let me give you just a couple of things. First of all, take an inventory of your current financial capital. Best way to do this, of course, is by doing a net worth statement. A net worth statement is where you list all of your assets on one side, all your liabilities on the other side, and then you subtract those. You subtract the liabilities from your assets, and you come up with what's called your net worth. Now, the net worth is really what is the determining factor of your financial ability, what is your determining factor of your financial capital. And it is when someone says that they are a millionaire or someone is a billionaire, what they're talking about there, of course, is they're talking about their net worth. And so take an inventory of your financial capital. Secondly, assess where you're weak in your financial capital. Is it that you have a lot of cash, but you don't have a lot of other investments? Or is it that you have a lot of investments, but no cash? And so you need to evaluate where you're weak and where you're strong when it comes to financial capital. Now, let me just take a brief tour on the side here for a moment while I talk about something. The more and more I read, the more and more I hear of news, and more I watch the political debates, and I hear the shenanigans that are going on and all the difficulties that are going on around the globe, the more and more I am convinced that an economic crash is coming sooner than what we might think. Now, I know that we had a slight depression or a recession or whatever people want to call it a couple of years ago, and they say that we are in recovery right now, which is possible. I don't think so. I think we've just been in a prolonged regression, and that the real fall is yet to come, but it's going to come, and it's going to come harshly. And so my question, and what I wanted to discuss for just a brief moment, is what should we be doing with our financial assets? What should we be doing with our financial capital in order to preserve it and in order to make sure that we have it when we need it and to acquire it, to acquire more with it? So the first thing I will say, and again, this is not specific advice for your situation. You're going to want to seek out a financial advisor, and I'll put a link in the show notes to a group of people that I suggest you go to for all your financial questions and decisions, that kind of thing. So if you have any specific questions for your own need, that you can go to them and they'll be able to help you out. But first thing is stay away from bonds. I believe that we are in a bond bubble. I think that the dollar in particular, but all bonds specifically and generally, will be coming to a halt. And because of inflation and because of such low interest rates currently, the only thing that can happen is interest rates going up. And when interest rates going up, bond prices fall. And as a result, you get wiped out. And so inflation and the reduction in the value of the bonds themselves leads me to conclude you want to stay out of bonds. And so the second thing possibly you might want to look into is stocks. Now, again, with stocks, it's a risky investment because, of course, the stock market goes up and down all the time, as you probably already know. And if you're going to be investing in stocks, I would say invest in stocks that will be in companies that will be doing things that you will need no matter what. So, for example, I'm not going to give you any specific recommendations of companies, but there are some companies who deal in luxury items, and there are some companies who deal in everyday practical items that you will need. And my recommendation is, of course, is to buy companies or buy shares in companies, mutual funds that invest in companies, whatever you want to call it, that deals with companies that service or provide products that we need on a daily basis, because they will not go out of style. And even though the prices may go up because of inflation, the companies then will just have to raise their prices, and as a result, their profits will still be the same. Their share prices may go down a little bit, their profits, though, will stay the same, and you'll still be able to get the dividends. So these are big dividend-paying companies, and if you're going to go stocks, that would be my recommendation. My third recommendation, though, and this is actually better than the first two, is that you need to buy hard assets. And when I mean hard assets, I mean gold and silver. And the best way to do that, of course, is just to buy bullion, gold, and silver. And bullion, gold, and silver will be able to hold its value and store value for a long time. Now, I have been reading some information recently because, and I'll be bringing this up in a later podcast, no doubt, but because I've been preaching through Genesis in part for the church in which I pastor, I've been reading some from the situation after Joseph has been raised to the level of second in command of all of Egypt, and he's able to restore preserve the land through the famine and the wealth for Pharaoh through the famine by storing up during the good years, and now he's got plenty in the bad years and this kind of thing. And eventually what happens is the people, it says that their money failed them, and they ended up giving themselves over and hiring themselves out basically as indentured servants to work the land and take a portion of the profits from the land, but the land no longer owned to them. And what is interesting with that is that it says their money failed them. And of course, this was not fiat money like we have today, which is, you know, backed by nothing except for the good faith of the federal government, whatever that means. It was actually real money. It was gold and silver, and yet it failed them. And so the bottom line is that there is no currency, there is no financial investment, there is no account, there is no fund, there is nothing that will ultimately stand the test of time. And that's why we need to trust in the Lord. But I will say that for generations and generations and generations, gold and silver has served as money. It has been the means of exchange. If the economy collapses significantly to where gold and silver is not used as a means of exchange, but people are wanting things like bread and milk and food items and clothing and things like that that they're not able to purchase because their money's failed them, then people who can invest in these or who have these resources available will be able to have a significant amount of asset appreciation and growth in their financial well-being. And so that's just kind of a scenario that I wanted to pose to you because I believe that some of it is approaching reality, and it's important for us to be prepared for that if we're going to be able to leave any kind of financial legacy. So all that to say this, determine to what extent you have diversified your portfolios, your financial capital and your assets, that kind of thing. Make sure that you know how much diversity you have and you're comfortable with it. And I'm not saying that you should be completely diversified, but I am saying that you should know how much diversity you have and where the weaknesses are in that. And then determine how you will acquire more of the financial capital. Will it be working? Will it be trading? Will it be crowdfunding? Will it be bartering? Whatever it might be, and determine the ways that you plan on acquiring more financial capital so that you can then use that to build greater wealth for you and for generations to come. And with that, this has been Steve Donahue with the Legacy Podcast, helping you build a multi-generational legacy of abundance. What will you do today to build your legacy?
All we leave behind, time after time, is a legacy with nothing to show. Now our country is lost, and it's not without cost, for there's many who struggle every day. And I think that it's time we start crying for our nation and lift our hands and pray. If today you lost your life, what would you leave behind? What would the ones around you see? What happened in the dash between your birth and death? What will you do to change your legacy? We'll wither away, and to this world we'll have to say goodbye. But just like the plant that withers away, we will leave many seeds behind. If today you lost your life, what would you leave behind? What would the ones around you see? What happened in the dash between your birth and death? What will you do to change your legacy? What will you do to change your legacy?